Welcome to Theory of Pets. I'm a passionate pet owner with a drive to help others like me uncover the truth about the pet industry and what goes on behind the scenes. Welcome back and happy new year. Thanks again for tuning in to Theory of Pets in 2020. I have some really exciting stuff in store this year, and I wanted to open the year with something that would get everybody thinking and really kind of spark interest in the podcast and future things. So I thought, what better than to shake things up with a new theory in the pet industry about where dogs come from. Now, most of us, if we think about where dogs come from, we think about evolution and we think about how humans domesticated wild dogs and we've done selective breeding and created all these different types of domesticated canines. Well, there is a really interesting and kind of fascinating, in my opinion, theory that's going around, and it's reinforced by recent DNA evidence, archaeological discoveries. And today I spoke with Bernie Taylor, who is an independent naturalist, thought leader, and an author whose research explores the mythological connections and biological knowledge among prehistoric, indigenous, and ancient peoples. You might be thinking, what in the world does this have to do with the pet industry? Well, his works in these areas actually recently have focused on canines and how the domesticated dog came to be. So I spoke with him today about his beliefs and about the science that backs that up. I find this extremely fascinating. He has a website and, of course, social media that you can follow. There's more information about that later in the podcast. There's also a really interesting video that's linked just below the podcast here, and it shows some of the cave paintings that have been shown to back up this theory. So if you are interested and you want to take a look, there's a lot of links just below the podcast you can check out. And of course, keep listening for more information on how you can learn more about Bernie, more about this theory and the science behind it.
Sam, thanks for having me on the show.
Yes, thanks for being here.
Lots of fun. We're going to talk about one of the biggest dog questions or pet questions has ever been asked. But I'm going to ask you a question first. From everything you've heard and everything you've read, where do dogs come from?
So I first have to start out by saying, obviously, for any of my followers, that I have been in the pet industry for over a decade now. I have done a lot of research. I have had countless things come across my desk, from different theories to scientific studies. And the one thing that certainly stands out to me, if I'm thinking about the origin of the dog, is that they derived from wolves and we domesticated them over time. You kind of think back to, you know, the things that you've seen and read and the videos and what you've seen on television. And it's sort of that, you know, it started with cavemen adopting, you know, wild dogs and working with them to hunt and things like that. And then over time, we domesticated them. Research tells us, you know, more in recent decades that there have been things like selective breeding to create these types of dogs that we now have. But it all started with domesticating wild dogs.
Yeah, and that is the groupthink, or the conventional wisdom, that everybody thought until 2015. And what happened in 2015 is a group of geneticists looked at the DNA of a wolf in Siberia from 35,000 years ago. And what they found by looking at the DNA was that dogs and wolves come from a common ancestor. Actually, the dogs and gray wolves come from a common ancestor. So that common ancestor isn't a wolf, and that common ancestor isn't a dog. So there was a mother canid. There was another dog. There was another canid, not another dog. And then about 2013, there was a study published in Nature by a Chinese and Russian team that came to the same conclusion. They said that about they said about 2,000 years ago, wolves and dogs existed separately. And so the question that started to be asked was, well, do dogs really come from wolves? And if dogs didn't come from wolves, where do dogs come from? And so that's our program today. But maybe I should step back a little bit, see how I got into this.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, so I see myself as a naturalist. I'm interested in birds and the fish, especially migrating fish here in the Pacific Northwest. And I came in on the biological clock side, kind of a hobby, interest. I wrote for magazines and wrote a book, Biological Time. And the concept was, how do salmon know how to come up our rivers at the same time? They follow one smart salmon, and every year they actually could be earlier, a little earlier, later, month early, month later. And I worked with Oregon Fish and Wildlife, and we figured out that exactly how salmon are timed. Then someone said to me, well, you know, this mechanism is also among Native Americans in their calendars. Well, of course, because Native Americans need to know where the salmon were, they couldn't wait on the river for a month to eat.
Right.
And in their calendars. And 10 years I came back, and what had happened was cave art was dated. It was a new technique that dated to more precisely. Cave art pushed it, put back to about 40,000 years ago. And previously, old was like 25,000 years ago, so big leap back. I started looking at the images, and in these images, I started seeing animals. I seen animals that were European animals, and animals at that time were African animals. And there was one end has all the African animals, has a giraffe and a mongoose, another one has a horse and a Iberian lynx and other animals. And I was fortunate to be assisted in the search of studying the panel by George Schaller, who's considered the world's foremost wildlife biologist. We saw canids. We saw canids with ears up, and we saw canids with ears down. And then I looked up and I found the DNA study that showed that dogs had diverged from wolves. And the DNA study showed that it was at least 27,000 years ago, and these images were in the 30,000s. So there was, what we're looking at possibly is the divergent canids between the dog and the wolf, which is quite, it's amazing. You know, so we're possibly looking at a biological history that was supposed through DNA evidence. And so George had actually, he's probably in his late 80s now, and a long, long, long time ago, when he did work in Africa on lions, he was assisted an anthropologist. And they were studying the question of how did humans for hundreds of thousands of years who had very little propelling instruments, so they didn't have spears that could probably go 10 meters, okay, not 40, 30, 40 feet, couldn't go very far. How did they kill fast-running animals? So if you look in, Wikipedia and the old encyclopedias, you see, caveman type, they've got their pulling out the, with their stone handles, knives, they're pulling and ripping on the flesh of a gazelle or something.
Sure.
Well, how the heck did they kill the gazelle? Because you and I can't run down a gazelle. And they couldn't do it either. And so how did they do it? Well, George had this study with this anthropologist to kind of answer that question. And they came to the assumption that we didn't kill the gazelle. We followed other animals that killed the gazelle. And they actually kind of, they followed other animals around in Africa that had killed animals to see if they could get close enough to that dead animal. So let's say a lion takes down a gazelle. What's the chance that you're going to be able to steal from that lion?
Not very good.
It's not very good at all. You're just going to be the next meal of the lion.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what happens if what if a pack of, let's say, three or four wild dogs, and you've got two friends with big sticks. You think you could scare off those dogs for a little bit?
I mean, it's possible.
It's darn right possible. And so you let the lion take their share. I'm sorry, the dogs take their share. Kick them off, get what you want, and then let them have the rest. Eventually, the dogs will figure out that that's the game, right?
Right.
And George introduced me to another concept of coursing, and it's done with cheetahs. And they're historically, there were sultans in the Middle East that hundreds, sometimes thousands, of cheetahs walking around their mansions or their estates. And what they would do is they would rob the cheetah at birth from the mother in the wild, and then they would teach the cheetah how to run down the gazelle. And then once the gazelle was run down, the cheetah basically immobilized it. They would then give a piece of the meat of the gazelle to the cheetah, and the cheetah learned that was the game. And the cheetah also learned whether she ran down a male or a female, because they didn't get rewarded if they ran down a female. And so what happened was we never domesticated cheetahs, because cheetahs don't breed well in the wild. It's very rare that cheetahs reproduce in a zoo. We have to keep giving them some sort of wild place. And so the only reason we don't have cheetahs roaming around our house and we have dogs is probably because we couldn't domesticate a cheetah. Okay, so going back to this concept is that those people in the Middle East, the sultans, they effectively became scavengers of the cheetah. Because they're running down the cheetah to run down the animal to kill it that they couldn't otherwise do. And George and his anthropologist friend, they came up with the hypothesis that we did the same thing with other animals for tens, if not hundreds of thousands of years. And that's how we get protein that we otherwise wouldn't have been able to get and have our larger brains. Okay.
Oh, interesting.
So that was all theoretical for George and his anthropologist friend until we saw the Kmart images. And the DNA came out that dogs don't come from wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And so putting this kind of together is that we probably became as we are now by scavenging from at least dogs, possibly cheetahs too. And that's the story of humanity. We're scavengers.
Wow, fascinating.
As humans, we've had a completely different story. We've had a story that we are at the top of the food chain, and we rescued orphaned wolves. Right, that's kind of the story. Well, they came begging at our campfires. So let's say take you and three of your friends, and assuming that all four of you are triathletes and you're super fit, and I give each one of a Bowie knife, real sharp big knife in the sheath, and you each get a pack of matches, and I put you out into the woods for 1 week. And so the four of you together, the rules are you can't light the fire so big that it burns down the forest, and you can't kill each other. Those are the only rules.
Okay.
And in the same time, we put you out there, you put, you know, two or three of your dogs out there separately from you, roaming around the woods for a week. What's the condition of your group of four and that group of dogs coming back after a week?
I mean, I feel like we do okay.
So you do okay. Who's going to come back a lot better? You or the dogs?
I mean, we certainly would be better off than the dogs, I think.
You think you're better off than the dogs? Okay. Now, dogs, you've walked through the woods, and your dogs will pretty much eat anything, right?
Yeah, they will.
They'll try, and then you say off or back or no or leave it or something like that. So dogs can actually scavenge on things that we normally, that you and I couldn't scavenge on, or we wouldn't because we'd get sick.
Right.
So dogs would eat grubs. Dogs would eat dead birds. Dogs would eat dead rodents. Dogs would eat all those things that we would get sick eating. Dogs can drink out of a stream that would give us giardia, or at least we'd have a few issues.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs have a stomach that can handle things that we can't. Okay. And we probably, so after that week, by the way, you'd be dehydrated. Because what are you going to drink?
Right.
Yeah, well, the dogs drink anything.
Anything.
Dogs drink out of toilet bowls, right? Okay. I mean, you don't have to admit if your dog does or not, but it's just it's a thing.
Oh, they do.
Okay. So after that week, the dogs have come out a lot better. So when we think of this concept of we rescued the orphan wolf cub or the wolves that couldn't find food, is entirely absurd, because the dog has even a domesticated dog has a greater hunting ability out there, or scavenging ability, maybe scavenging ability, than do we, even as a triathlete with Bowie knives and a pack of matches. So it's a completely different way of looking Is a dog our pet? Or are we sort of the pet of the dog?
I've asked myself that question many times before.
I'm a dog person. I'm not a cat person. And we have a cat. We have a house cat. And you know, I'm completely convinced the cat thinks we're the pet. But there's something about, you know, the human mind that we created this story of dogs being, we rescue dogs and dogs could not survive without us. But I grew up in the New York metro area in Long Island, and behind our home was a large wooded area that went for miles. And I remember feral dogs that, and they're eventually captured, but there were, you know, a dozen or so dogs that had, for whatever reason, had left the homes and they ran in the woods. And they seemed to do pretty good out there finding the food where they needed, where it needed to be. So I believe that we became the scavengers off the dogs, thank goodness. And what happened was, when we entered Europe, we found we had a competitor. That competitor was the Neanderthals, who had been there for hundreds of thousands of years and had much better skills of coping with the cold temperatures. They were stockier